everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Onigiri & Co. podcast. Today I am finishing my little series about FPV systems and I am super happy to have Buttgrinder here to talk about ethical questions raised by FPV HD systems. So hi, how are you?
Fantastic subject matter. Thank you for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
No worries. I was thinking, how can I cover HD systems in a bit of a different ways than other people do, but also mainly, what am I interested in when we start talking about HD systems? So I'm interested about performance. I'm interested about how to use it, why we need HD, if we need it. And then I was like, but there's lots of things going on behind the scene, or not really behind the scene. And I know nothing. You know, I barely, like, I'm the tip of the iceberg. And I feel like you were the best person that I could ask questions about this topic. So thanks for joining.
No problem. We'll see. I mean, I know a bit about it, I think. We'll see what comes.
You definitely know better than me. In case some people don't know you, it might happen. Do you want to quickly introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, I am Buttgrinder. I'm Buttgrinder, yeah.
You're from the US?
Yeah, from the US. Buttgrinder from the US. Been doing this like 7 years now, 4 years professionally.
Yeah. And we met when I came to the US. It was really fun. I feel like I've always I've always followed you on YouTube, and it's been a cool journey.
Way back.
Yeah, way back.
Definitely, I'm stoked to see that you're still doing it too. Like, you've been doing FPV videos for a long time. It's cool to see you still doing it. Still being active in the community and everything, you know.
Yeah, I've had to adapt, obviously, because life has changed. So I can't share as much as I used to with my flying. I can't really do vlogs. And the podcast is the only thing that I feel like I'm contributing to the community. So I fly for me and I do the podcast for the community. So I found a balance.
that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah. Well, speaking of this podcast and the episode, the plan for this episode for people who are listening or watching is that we're going to talk a bit about your experience and history with FPV HD systems, and then we're going to go into the main topic of this episode, which is ethical questions raised by HD systems in their development, in the way they are promoted or, you know, created, this kind of thing. So the first question I have is, how long have you been using HD systems, if any, and how did it all started? What's your history with that?
So I was like, you know, analog for life. Analog was perfectly fine. I just fly freestyle. I fly fast. I wanted the low latency of analog. All HD systems at the time, there was like a Connex system or something with like real big receivers. I had one in a giveaway. So I got this system. I just never installed it because everything was so giant. You had to use a ground station. And this was like 2018, 2019, maybe something like that. DJI was like just getting started with their FPV. So I never even tried that. Then DJI came out, a lot of people were using it, but I just saw no reason for me to get it. You know what I mean? It was like, sure, it's like real clear HD video, but there's the latency and the lag and all that. The video transmitters are these big clunky things that you still have to register online before you can even use it. You have to register, even though you can use fake information. That's another ethical thing we can talk about. But I just didn't see the point in switching to HD. It was expensive and everything, so... Always analog. HD0 came out, Woxnell came out. I tried them, did not like any of them. And then HD0 finally came out with the 1-watt VTX and the 90 FPS camera. And I tried those and I was like, holy cow, this is so good. It was HD. It was so much clearer than analog, but it had the same latency, the same super low latency. It didn't glitch and lag like digital DJI and Woxnell does. It, you know, it sparkles. It breaks up like analog. And that's what I was used to. So I was like, wow, I was super impressed. I don't like how the VTXs are $100. You know, I don't like a few things about it. I don't like MIPI cords at all. But the upgrade in video quality, I was blown away for HD0. You know what I mean? Like, I've tried Woxnell and DJI, the current versions. I've tried O3. I haven't tried the newest Woxnell, but I tried the OG VTX, and I just do not like that style of video, of HD video at all. I like analog, but HD0 is just like really good analog that still breaks up and has low latency. So I was sold. So I switched HD0 all the way, every quad, even my micros, my tiny whoops, everything.
Oh, wow. And so HD0. When was that? When did you fully switched?
Yeah, I'm going to say that was maybe 4 months ago or so, very recently, maybe about 4 months ago. I forget. I made a video about it where I was like, okay, I'm fully committing to HD Zero.
Yeah. So maybe it's
about half a year ago.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of people I've been talking to who have been in the hobby since, not the beginning, but, you know, 2015, 2016, have only fully switched almost this year, you know? And I'm like, it's interesting that people who have been the longest have not, like, rushed to change their system straight away, or at least people in my circle. Maybe other people have switched earlier.
No, same here. Everybody was still on analog. A few people switched to DJI and stuff, but for the majority, everybody was still on analog. Like, there was no reason to switch. You know, it'd have to be... It was more new people getting into it. They would see, I think, like, you know, if you're new to FPV, you see Rotor Riot, you see all the affiliate link channels that YouTube's pushing you to buy stuff, and it's all DJI. So, of course, you're going to buy DJI when that's all that's being pushed is, like, mainstream or whatever, you know? And then analog didn't get that much love. But now there's so many options, so many different options. And people are starting to shy away from DJI as a brand as well.
Yeah.
And going to HD Zero and Walksnail and stuff.
Yeah. DJI is the only one I've actually tried in the past because mainly because I was testing for my current work. And at work, because we work in a construction industry, we need what we call reliable gear, and you know that needs to be consistent. And I didn't want to have the pressure of having to build my drones. So at the time, we didn't do FPV at all for work. We were just flying our normal Mavics and stuff, or Inspire. And then when they came up with the DJI Avata, it aligned with when we finally got the authorization to fly FPV for work. So I told my boss, look, we already have all the DJI stuff. May as well just get that CineWhoop to do our CineWhoop work.
May as well.
And I had tried so many different systems in the meantime, but they were all fitted with the DJI HD system in it. So that's all I knew. And I'm still not a big fan. I think the DJI Avata somehow looks a bit better, but me, it makes me sick. So it's actually hard to fly. It makes me like actually dizzy.
Yeah, that's the motion sickness. Same thing like VR. Do you get sick when you play VR too?
Yes.
Yeah, the latency, same thing.
Yeah, and it's funny because analog has never made me sick, and I don't know why. We joked about it on an episode with another friend, and he's like, maybe you can't switch to digital. You have to stick with analog.
It's the latency because your eyes are expecting one thing in your brain, and it's getting fed another thing. The image doesn't quite line up, so you get sick, you know?
Exactly. But after talking with lots of people, I'm thinking it would be nice if I could give a go to HD Zeros for my own quads. For work, I will have to do with what it is. And but it would be nice to test HD Zero, and I'm more and more interested in it. But the fact that we're using DJI at work, you know, I've already told my boss, because he's really like, how can I say, a person who's really aware of ethical things in the world, like you know, we try to be a very eco-friendly company, we try to, you know, do the right things. And I told him, it just annoys me that DJI is DJI, because if we could choose something else, I would. and that's only from the little things I know about them, and I was hoping that you could maybe give the audience more insight into all these companies that in FPV, and starting maybe with DJI, have been not as ethical as we wish they were.
yeah, for real. I mean, it's big business is what it is. It's a lot of freaking money. And so this is all as I understand it. And from what I've seen, DJI, about 15 years ago, they started cloning the Phantom-style drone, right? The old school Phantom 1. That was, other companies had already had that design. They were making little drones, smaller companies. So from what I hear, DJI stole that design, started making it really popular, the Phantom, made a bunch of money with that, got a bigger budget, started making other drones. Then, and it's all conspiracy stuff, but then the CCP, the Chinese government, was like, oh, we see that you're this drone manufacturer, so they infiltrated it. So it's basically DJI is the CCP, and I have nothing against, you know, any Chinese, anything, anybody, governments. I do. I dislike governments, people. I have no issues with anybody anywhere. So in this talk, don't get me wrong. I'm talking specifically about the government. All right.
Yeah.
So then CCP got in with DJI. Now they own them. Now that you have everybody running DJI drones, they're collecting the data and sending it back home to the servers in China and stuff, collecting data on everybody through the drones. Mm-hmm. So they banned it for the U.S. military. You can no longer use any DJI drones for U.S. military stuff. They're trying to ban it for enterprise. So, you know, if you mm-hmm. need to fleet out your company and buy 10 DJI drones, you can't, because they're worried about getting that much information sent back. DJI had also, they made a little remote control car that shot like rubber bullets or whatever. That there was another company that made these little robots that did the same thing. That company reached out to me to review it, and they said, hey, DJI stole our code. They stole our idea. And in the DJI robot, if you can get into the code and read it, it has notes from our engineers, from our product. They just blatantly stole the code base, put it in their product, didn't even bother to wipe anything out in it. So things like that, you know, that was early DJI. That was like, okay, they're pretty freaking shady. They're a cloning company. They steal IPs from people, and now they're possibly owned by the Chinese government, and they're hiding that all up, but they're collecting data on everybody through the drones. And then the Uyghur situation in China, the refugee situation, DJI, they were using DJI drones to spy on them and just collect intel very illegally on everybody during that situation. So DJI got hit with human rights violations, I think from the UN. I'm not sure which governing body, but they have human rights violations against them. Like, there's a lot of court cases against DJI for malpractice, IP theft, just general shitty business practices, on top of being accused of spying on everybody through their drones and sending all that data back to, you know, Chinese servers and stuff to the government. So DJI is the big one. They are the one that's like, I don't think anybody should be giving them any money personally and furthering their damn agenda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, you use them for work. They just work. So a lot of people are going to continue to use them. You know, there is real no other viable option. What are you going to use besides DJI? You got Autel and you got Sky Dio, whatever. Autels are pretty freaking nice, but I don't think they're just as like cheap and user friendly as a DJI drone, you know?
Yeah. And that's what Lexi, in the first episode we did in this series, she raised up the fact that, but if we want to change things, even just as hobbyists to start with, we have to start buying HD0, we have to start buying other systems, and also give mm-hmm. them feedback, and as a community, push these brands that we would rather see making developments, or new brands as well, because you might have some brands that are trying to develop things and we don't even really know about it. And she said that's the only way we could maybe balance the giant DJI.
No, she's right, 100%. We have to, with our money, the only way we have to vote with our money for the companies that we want to see. Because if everybody bought DJI and only DJI, then all the money would go to DJI and we'd all be stuck using their stuff. Because these smaller companies trying to develop systems wouldn't have money. They'd have no market share. HD0, I feel like, is doing all right because it's a damn good product. Like, they don't have a lot of marketing and shit mm-hmm. behind them. Just people flying it being like, hey, this is a really good system. People hear that, they want to try it. Meanwhile, DJI just has advertisements paying people. They're all over the place sending stuff out. Like, HD0, as far as I know, doesn't really send much free shit out to people to review. They're like, if you want to try it, you can pay for it, you know?
Yeah, but also because they need the funds for it. Like, they can't afford sending systems, and sometimes you don't know what people are going to do. Maybe they're going to try it, and then what are they going to give back? You know, it's not that mm-hmm. easy.
Yeah, it's a gamble for sure.
Yeah.
So there's alternatives to DJI. So if anybody is listening to this and they're on DJI, like, there's HD0, but there's also Voxnail that's really mm-hmm. good. Voxnail is basically DJI. It's a little buggier and it's new, you know what I mean? But it's proven to be pretty damn good. A lot of people are using it for drift and stuff, for drift chasing.
Yeah. Do you know a bit the history of Voxnail? Because I don't. I'm an old grandma and I don't know that.
They seemingly kind of just came out of nowhere. They're Caddx. They're owned by Caddx. It's just a division of Caddx FPV.
Yeah.
Like Run Cam owns SpeedyBee, you know, same thing. But okay. There, you know, there's the rumor was, well, so when they announced it, there was the Fat Shark version and the Voxnail version of the same thing. Okay. And from what I understand, the Fat Shark people designed the actual physical goggles, like the ones that, you know, the shape and everything, the way the optics go. But then Voxnail did all the internal stuff. The video system is all Voxnail. So Fat Shark didn't have that much to do with it, except for they designed the goggles and then they made theirs white and the Avatar ones are black or whatever. Same exact system.
Yeah.
But Fat Shark tried to get in on it. And I don't even know what's going on with that. I imagine Fat Shark won't be around much longer.
It's really interesting that Caddx, because Caddx is not linked to any DJI product anymore, or are they still doing?
No, not that I know. No, they lost a contract to make the video transmitters, and I think RunCam is making them.
Oh, okay.
I don't keep up a whole lot on DJI, but I just see what people say online.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that that now they have their own thing then, that is WalkSnail, and I know that it's a bit more buggy. I know Lexi had some issues in Bali with it, like she hasn't been able to troubleshoot yet, but I mean, I'm all for HD, because every time I do these episodes, people are like, oh, you want to stay analog. And I'm like, no. My brain processes better analog, but I'm all for HD. Like, why not? Like, every time we fly for work with, with goggles that are HD, I'm like, this is beautiful. You know, you look at everything.
Yeah, why not get a clearer picture?
Exactly. And it's a bit nicer to show clients when you work for people as well than just like they have a screen that is all buzzy. They're like, what am I going to get? Whereas if you already get some HD footage, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's nice about the HD Zero goggles too. You just plug in HDMI and you plug it into a monitor and it's right there. You don't have to do anything special. You don't have a special monitor like DJI. You can just use any HD monitor.
Yeah. But ethical questions in FPV and not just about HD. It's a little bit more about all these rules that are coming our way. It's like it's also coming to Australia. I know there's lots of rules in America. What do you think about all this? What do you think? The main thing that I usually think about is like, are they doing all these rules because the future is going to be drone dominated for like companies like Amazon or for the big giant companies, and they want to start saving their airspace and things like that. Am I crazy to think that? What do you think?
That's totally because airplanes have above three in America 399 feet and above. We have Class G airspace below that. It varies where you're at, but it's usually Class G, which is just like open airspace. That's where you do hobby stuff with your things, and now they want to take that Class G airspace, and everybody's like, why? Why do you need that? Why do you want that? They're saying for safety of airplanes, for safety of all this stuff, but like those are way above 400 feet. You know, ours are way down here. So it has to be delivery drones. It has to be that they want to test stuff. I really think it's going to be for police drones too, for surveillance drones, like around cities and stuff. Around if there's any protests going on, they're going to want all the surveillance drones up. So they're not going to want hobbyists in the air that could interfere with that. So I 100% think it's delivery drones, but I don't think it's going to work out. I think it's just for testing purposes, and they're going to realize like, oh, hey, this is actually like pretty hard to make delivery drones work reliably and more efficiently than just somebody with a van walking around.
Yeah,
but they want to do it. You know, I think the companies have bought and sold to government as far as the airspace is concerned and the FAA, so they can start testing their stuff.
Yeah. And I feel like this is the reason why the rules are so early. Because when you think about it, I keep saying to my friends at the park, we're like, I personally barely fly higher than trees because it's fun. I fly around the trees or buildings. I'm never, like if a plane or a helicopter is flying where I fly, we have bigger problems to solve.
Yeah, the problem is with the plane. It's about to hit you, exactly.
It's
pretty crazy too. It's all around the world. It's not just the US government or the Australian government. Like all governments, like drones are bad now. Like we have to crack down on drones, you know. Europe has a home-built exception though for their remote ID. Everybody has to have a remote ID unless it's home-built and doesn't require GPS or fly modes to operate. So if it's manual, you know, then you don't have to remote ID it, and that makes a ton of sense. So that I don't know who's working in the European government over there that's like, oh, hang on. You know, here's a very common sense solution that will like separate the drones that they're actually worried about from hobbyist drones or racing drones or whatever.
Yeah. Do you think that like a lot of other things that are trying, like the government is trying to regulate, people are just going to do what they want anyway, and then the rules are discarded?
Yeah, some people will get in trouble. The majority of us, it'll never even be an issue. Like in America, the requirements are if you register a drone, then it has to be outfitted with a remote ID. If you don't have to register your drone law-wise, then it also doesn't need a remote ID. I don't know anybody that registers drones. We all, most of us already don't register. So why would we put remote ID on? Because if we have to register first, then get remote ID. We're already not doing that. So I think like it's going to be pretty much like that. There's going to be a big stink about it for maybe a year. They're going to find some people and it's going to kind of just die down and go back to normal. But it's just a dangerous precedent to set. It's dangerous to have them have that law even in the books where they can prosecute you if they want for this remote ID thing. They can track you if they want. They force you to get it, but, you know, none of us are going to comply. people that, that do it for work, if you operate under 107, then you have to register your drone, which means you have to remote ID it. So if you're, one of my examples in my video was, say you're filming a rap video with your Cinewhoop or even a Tiny Whoop with HD on it, that's under 107. So you would have to remote ID it. That couldn't even carry a remote ID. So there's just all these conflicts with the fucking rules because they don't understand model aircraft, you know?
Yeah.
Is it just, it's these government organizations being crazy out of touch with what we actually do.
Yeah. And it's the same here in Australia. You know, it sounds like they would benefit from having someone in their team that, that knows a little bit more about what is FPV, how is it used, or not just FPV, like smaller drones, you know, and what, why we use them and what we're doing with it. But sometimes I'm even tempted to think, oh, well, then just track us all for a year and see that we're actually not doing all the crazy things you might yeah, think that we're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, that data is going to be pretty boring.
But at the same time, it would mean that we all agree to be tracked. And I know that some people have issues with that. But sometimes I'm like, I lead a boring life myself. And my flying is not exciting. I'm not flying at airports. I'm not doing like plane chase. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if you're going to track me, you're going to see circles on the park. And you're going to be like, oh, cool. She's like 40 meters high. I don't know what it is in feet, but you know what I mean? Like it's tree high.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. Like 30 feet up.
Yes. And,
but it's also like they assume by outfitting remote ID that we're going to be like high up in the air where their little fucking things can read that remote ID. Half the time we're like in parks under trees, running in office parks surrounded by buildings where it's not going to, even if you outfit your remote ID, nobody's going to be able to read it. It's not going to be able to broadcast outside of those buildings or the trees or anything, you know? So yeah. It just makes no sense at all. Like they're assuming we all just fly 300 feet in the air straight out and back so they can track us. But even if we install them, they're not going to be able to. So why do it in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, they probably have to because now we are considered as aircraft, I suppose. And it's a bit the problem with drones. It's like you can fly at 3 meters high from the ground, like human, because you, like you said, you do a rap clip and you're just flying around the main, the lead, you know. But also our drones have the possibility to go very high and drop bombs like if we want to, even though it's a mission.
RC cars we can strap bombs to as well if you want. Like anything can be a bomb. You can put a bomb in a baseball and throw it. You can strap one to a bird.
Yeah.
You can get real creative and make bombs out of anything. Why single out drones? Like I understand that obviously they work really well for that, but they're hurting the wrong people by doing all of this.
That's very true.
You're not gonna catch any bad actors. You know, nobody's gonna do anything dangerous while they have the remote ID on. They're just gonna turn it off and then go do something dangerous.
Like, exactly. It's a weird rules that in my opinion, when we started flying FPV, the government wasn't that wasn't that involved in Australia to tell us what we were allowed to do or not. And it was more that local people, the neighbors who were worried and be like, are you allowed to do this? And I was like, oh, it's new technology. The general public doesn't really know what it is. And it's normal to be afraid because that's a human reaction. What is this? I don't know what it is. I'm scared, you know. But I was hoping that governments would be acting differently because, yes, it's a new technology, but you guys are educated, or you would hope they are. and you're gonna handle the whole thing differently. And sometimes I'm wondering, that's why I asked about Amazon or even I never thought about police that much, like you said, surveillance and stuff. But I'm like, it has to come from all the third parties to influence the government of taking such drastic decisions, because at the end of the day, a lot of these drones that we use are only toys. And then it's just a bit confusing sometimes why it's just drones.
you would think for them to enact all these laws that there had been some deaths or tragedies or there's been no like major anything involving drones, I don't think, except for the, you know, Ukraine-Russia war. Besides that, that, nobody's ever died by a drone. Nobody's ever been injured by a drone. People got maybe spied on, you know, which is horrible, but it wasn't like a huge rash of it happening. There was never anything that made them have to necessitate making these fucking laws. It doesn't make sense. So something is definitely going on behind the scenes for them to come out of the blue and be like, oh, drones, now we got to track all these. Like, why? What happened to make you want to do this now?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
They got money from somebody. They got money from Google and Amazon and UPS and everybody.
Yeah. And then we'll see in the future, you know, it's exactly what you said. Maybe it will not lead to to, you know, you go out of your house and you have all these drones. You know, I just can't see how that would work. But maybe I'm short-sighted. I don't know. I just find this a bit. They will realize that maybe it's just not the way, or at least not in the near future. So in the meantime, let us do what we can do with our own drones, you know, or bring different airspace again. Like you can, like you said, the airspace, the G1, I think it's the same in Australia. It's still pretty flexible, especially depending on where you live.
And it's like I know 400 feet, like 1,000 meters maybe.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And the US is as big, or if not bigger, than Australia. So depending on where you live, this airspace is completely different as well. So we could section that a bit more, even if they really want to save.
Yeah, cut that in half. I'll stay under 100 feet. What am I going to do 100 feet in the air? That's not exciting. I'm just going to, cool, I'm 100 feet in the air. This is great. And I'm going to go back down and try to find a dive gap, you know?
Yeah.
And racing drones as well, which are freestyle drones are based off of racing drone design, you know?
Yes.
Racing drones, we all see how that goes. DRL, even, like, indoors, even outdoor multi-GP, the gates are never more than, you know, what, like 2 meters off the ground, 3 meters off the ground for a gate up there, then it goes back down. Yeah. And using the new FAA rules, those have to have remote ID on them. You would have to remote ID racing drone, because, and everybody racing also would have to have a Part 107 license, because they're using it for more than just fun. There's a video from the FAA that XJet pointed out. This guy said, he was trying to explain who needs a 107, and he said, say there was a storm and you go out to inspect your roof damage from the storm with your drone, you need a 107 certificate for doing that, because you're doing more than just flying your drone for fun. If you fly and record a video and upload it to YouTube, even non-monetized, you need a 107, because that's more than just flying for fun, recreational. You know, inspecting your roof was the one where I was like, my God, this is ridiculous. So say you want to use a Tiny Whoop to inspect your roof for damage, you have to get a 107, you have to register the Tiny Whoop, and then you have to put a remote ID on the Tiny Whoop, which it won't even fit on there. So, like, they just have no idea what's going on. And people are going to get fined for this shit, too. I really am hoping I get fined for flying a Tiny Whoop so I can show how ridiculous this is, you know? Get a lawyer, maybe, like, panhandle some money and try to fight it in court and just bring attention to the case, just bring attention to the absurdity of it.
Yeah. What do you think the solutions could be to improve, like to reduce these discrepancies, like between theory and reality? What could we do as a community? What could some companies do if we want to trust some companies?
Oh, God, I don't trust no company, because they're the bottom line. Most companies are owned by people that don't give a shit about FPV. They just want their money. They just hire people that care about FPV, you know?
It's true.
I don't know at all. So companies, Bind and Flies are going to have remote ID. So, you know, if you're going to go buy a Nazgul, that's going to have a remote ID module that comes with it. That's the law. You have to do that. Unless they get a loophole, like, oh, it doesn't have propellers on it, so it's not a Bind and Fly. It's not a you know what I mean? Or, like, say it doesn't have the receiver. If you have to solder in your own receiver, then maybe they can get around that loophole that way or whatever. But DJI drones are screwed. Those are going to have a system in it for sure. Autels, all those ones are going to have something in it. For us, I think we can just keep doing what we're doing now and not register, just not do the stupid rules, you know, like keep flying safe, keep not flying over people, using common sense and everything. That's done the entire community fine for a long time, since RC planes, since before drones. RC plane people, you know, they don't fly around people, don't run into nobody, and it's fine. We've been doing that for a long time. We can keep doing that. We have a pretty good set of, like, community rules already in place.
Yeah. And this is part of the ethical topic. Like, as a community, it's not like they're non-spoken rules, but you know when it starts being something that you shouldn't be doing, because then it will penalize everybody. And I'm saying that now, but when I was younger, I did some things that were probably bad idea at the time, you know, like chasing a car on a road. Like, I don't know if I can say that.
I chased a cop last week with my Tiny Whoop, so
you know what I mean. Like, I've done things differently than what I would do now, because now I'm older and I'm wiser. I want to think that
definitely.
But, I still see crazy things getting out, and you're like, okay, well, if, for example, our government regulations here are made by CASA, not FAA, but that's the equivalent. And I'm like, if CASA sees that, they're still going to think, all these cowboys out there, we need to keep an eye on them, you know? So it's also a bit of the community duty to to make, I want to say, considerate choices.
Yeah, and publicly shame people that don't and let them know it's not cool.
Yeah, but that leads me to, go on.
I was just going to say that drones can be dangerous. I don't think the public is aware how dangerous they can be. Like, we are, though. We know if you run a 5-inch drone into somebody, you could very well kill them if you do it hard enough. I don't think your average citizen walking around realizes that they're that dangerous.
Yeah, it's true. They can be dangerous, and it's also
since
something
we're aware of that, we take precautions.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and it's also something I think sometimes the rare times I fly alone, I'm like, actually, I have a weapon with me in case something happens. Just fly it in the
people. You can grab a demi bomb, beat somebody with it. It's heavy enough for sure.
Yes,
I'll beat somebody with my drone. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. But this leads me to something that I didn't plan to talk on this podcast, but I told you there were going to be tangents. And talking about good ways of flying and solutions to, not fly above roads. And you have your project of park. Do you want to talk about it a bit? Because I saw some good news. I don't know how much you can say.
No, anything, everything. Let's talk about it. We officially, I say we because it's a community thing. We officially own it as of like 2 days ago. Deed went through everything. I got the deed, or I signed the papers. So it's the land. We own it. It's the community's land. I'm going out there Monday, hopefully, for the first time to look at it and film a little video about it and stuff. But I think it's a fantastic idea. I think we're going to need these little drone parks, especially if the FAA really starts cracking down and we have like nowhere to fly and they actually have people getting fined all over the place. We're going to need little like spots like this, little spots in the woods where we can build cool freestyle tracks, because it's fun to fly around trees. But for me, that gets old. I want like dive gaps. I want wall rides. I want like cool obstacles. And if we start doing this all over the place, we can build them up however we want. Like 10 acres is a lot. We can build a pretty big little drone thing here.
Yeah. So I have heaps of questions about this if you want to talk about it.
Let's do it.
First of all, how did you get the idea? Did you see skate parks and you were like, we definitely need this for drones? Or was
pretty
it
much.
Something?
Pretty much, yeah. I had the idea maybe like, a lot of people have had this idea too, not just me, but maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I started thinking about like, well, wouldn't it be cool if we had a little spot like a skate park, but for drones? Talked about it. Everybody's like, you should just start a GoFundMe. And I just like, it's a lot of work. I don't want to do it. And then I made a goal like 2022. I was like, okay, by October, I'll just set up the GoFundMe. Excuse me, we'll see what happens. So I set it up in October. It's been, 8 months now, whatever the heck it's been. And we have almost $40,000. And we have, well, not anymore because I bought the land, but we made almost $40,000, bought the park. And now I got people like just offering all the help. They want to come out there and help build it up and fly it and hang out and camp and stuff. So I'm going to start planning little trips out there with everybody to hang out and build it up.
Cool. So how far from where you are located is this park?
It's 4 hours from me, 4.5 hours maybe. So definitely a little bit of a drive, but that's doable in a day. So I figure, I would leave early in the morning, get out there in the afternoon, hang out for 2 days, work on it, then just head back 4 hours and be home. Not too bad.
Yeah. So, the places where people race at the moment here in Australia, so talking about FPV racing, are just empty fields and it's all fenced and you can only go on Sundays or when there's a race or when there's training and people have keys and it's a club. And so how in comparison to this, how would your park ideally be run?
The idea was to find somewhere rural enough to where anybody can just go out there when they want, but we didn't make enough for that, so we had to get one that was in a bit of a town. So the way this park is, it's a long 10 acres, and in the front, somebody lives in the house, and we had to pay for a right-of-way to use their driveway to go past their house to get into the park. So I'm not going to be able to have just whoever wants to go out there whenever go into it, because we have to respect these people's privacy and their house. Yeah. But I'm going to have little events, 10, 20 people at a time. Let the neighbors know, hey, I'm going to have 20 buddies out here for camp and trip for the weekend, whatever. And we're only going to be doing this in the summer and fall. So it's not going to be like year round that they're going to have to deal with it. But it's pretty much going to be small parties of people going out there. And, maybe make the neighbors some cookies or something. Get on their good side. They'll be like, hey, sorry. There's going to be a few cars driving past your house this weekend, but then we'll be gone for months or whatever, Yeah. But ideally, it would be it would be just an open community park. I want to start doing GoFundMes for more of these for other people in different states. So yeah. The dream was to have one where anybody can just show up and fly. Just show up and fly, whatever, maybe sign a waiver in case you hurt yourself or something. But for this one that we got, you're going to have to like let me know you're going out there so I can let the one neighbor. It's a town of 300 people. We have one house for like 10 acres, 20 acres around us. But that's why it was cheap. You know what I mean? It's a small rural town. There's a house right there. But one of the neighbors is cool. He asked me if he could hunt on the land. And I said, sure, I don't care, whatever. Go and hunt on the land. So he's on our side now. So he's going to like us.
Yeah, that's cool. But the thing is, you have to start with something, and you don't always choose. When you have a concept, you don't always really choose how you're going to start. And you have to. It's starting is better than holding on for the perfect thing for years. Mm-hmm, and sometimes it never happens. So well done on doing this. It sounds great. I want to go to the US again now, so I can.
Yeah,
go to
hell the yeah! Next year we should have it pretty built up. So you just let me know.
Wow, that's gonna be great. And also anything that brings people together, you know, some people never have flying friends close by, you know, they rely on events and they rely on new locations to meet people. So that's really, really cool.
And this week we have so much room, it's gonna be more than just drones. I've like crawlers, you know, the RC crawlers. So I want to build a big crawler track, a big crazy one with seesaws and stuff. I want to build like a racetrack for cars. I want to build like big jumps for bashers. I just want it to be like an RC park, more than, you know, not just drones, but everything RC. There's also a creek in the back, so we can do RC boats in the creek. Like, it's a pretty legit spot. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We can do a little bit of everything. But definitely have like a super cool drone freestyle spot.
Yeah, and it is needed. And then at the end of the day, what's the difference between your local spot where you're going to go all the time and a spot that is built somewhere, you know what to expect, and you go there and you do some lines. And I feel like it's just ideal, because you know you're allowed there, you're going to meet people, and after a while you know the spot and you're like, oh yeah, I can't wait to go back there, you know. It's a bit of a FPV vacation.
Exactly, FPV B&B is what I was saying. And if you you know, if you like camping, camp out there. If you like if you make content, if you make videos, it's content all day. Hey, I went to the FPV park, you know what I mean? People are going to watch that video. Like, it's going to be beneficial for people to come out here and help work on it and stuff.
Yeah,
it's for everybody, you know.
Yeah, the good thing too is, I suppose you can go there with any level you have, and you can learn from interacting with people. And, you know, it's. How do you think you're going to call the park? Are we going to have like a butt grinder land, butt land, FPV land?
I don't know. I definitely want it to like not just be my name. I want it to reflect everybody. So we'll think of something. We'll think of something good. There's been a few ideas floating around. I forgot all of them, but not Botland. I like Botland, but I want it to more reflect everybody.
Yes. That's amazing that you already are thinking, okay, what's next, and how can I bring this kind of concepts to more people, which is huge work as well. But maybe you can find people who can be the like what you did for this park, you could find people to rely on, so they do their own promotion and they talk to councils and they talk to neighbors where they live, and then they're like, hey, this is the project. And your park, the first one, could be the model that you can present later and to towns and cities. You're like, look, before people would fly on the car park of whatever Costco. I don't know if you have Costco's, but you know, like,
yeah, we do.
and now they fly there, and no one is grumpy about it. So
exactly, yeah. And once we get this one going and we get cool footage and it looks really cool, then I want to start on other ones. We can point to this and be like, look what we did with, you know, only $30,000. Like, let's get $100,000. Let's make a huge cool one somewhere or something.
Yes.
Get some investors and stuff. Like, this is all just people. I have GemFan donated and a few other smaller companies, but this was all just people. This is all just people that believed in the dream that donated, you know. and if we can do this, imagine what we could do with like some big like money and stuff.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think it's needed, and it's not just in the US, you know, it's needed everywhere, especially with regulations coming up with remote IDs and things like that could show that the community is involved in trying to be respectful and trying to find solutions that are suitable for everybody. And then you don't have to have so much regulations thrown at us, because if we have dedicated places, we do the right thing, you know?
Exactly. Most people, especially those of us that feel like they've been flying for a while, we're pretty cautious, we're pretty safe. You know, we don't buzz people, we don't fly over roads a lot or anything. Like, we're pretty respectful.
Yeah.
So they take that away, like, of course we're just gonna all go somewhere else and like do the same thing, you know. Even if it's not in public, we're gonna go find an FPV park or the woods or somewhere to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not gonna stop. Nobody's gonna stop flying. That's for sure.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what lots of people thought. And that's why I was worried that it would go, it can go both ways. It can go, oh, well, the community came together to create that. Or it can go, well, fuck it. Now I'm going to trespass and I'm going to go to this old factory, something there that I shouldn't go because it's dangerous. I could
something
die
that's
there.
Indoors. And yeah, and well, it'd be per the FAA legal because it's indoors. It's not outside, so you don't need remote ID. But yeah, dangerous to your health because you get robbed or fall through the floor or some shit. Exactly.
Yes.
They're making it a little more dangerous for us.
Yeah. And then people, because you're still trespassing and you create problem for other people. I'm thinking of that because close to where I live, there's an amazing abandoned building, which is very rare in Australia because unlike the US, as soon as something is not used, it has a tendency to be bought, destroyed and then rebuilt by someone else. Mm-hmm. But recently, a friend of mine recently, last year, maybe 6 months ago, wanted to go give it a go and fly. And when he arrived, there was like police, like, you know, do not cross everywhere. And apparently there had been a murder there, or at least they had found a body, which, you know, in Australia, it's even more rare. You know, I know your country is a bit different.
Yeah, it's pretty, that literally a daily occurrence.
Yeah, but here it was more like, what happened? And now the result of that is that nobody's allowed there, and as there's cameras, and I think they're gonna destroy it. And that was one of the most famous abandoned building around Melbourne, like a giant factory where people came to film short movies, bands were having their video clips filmed there, you know, photo shoots. Mm-hmm. And now it's over. So that's what I'm saying, like when you start having restrictions, you go to these places where you actually never know what can happen there, you know.
Yeah, that's actually the number one bando killer. The number one thing that takes away our spots in America is a dead body. Pretty much every good abandoned building, a dead body's ruined it, and now nobody can go out. We just had one a few months ago. It was an abandoned boys' home. We parked like 10 deep, being loud, playing Gel Blaster all day, flying. Nobody cared. Somebody died there. Now it's all shut off. Nobody can go back there.
Yeah.
So quit dying in abandoned buildings, please.
I mean, you don't always choose, but yes.
No, you don't always get to choose, but if you do, please don't. Mm. If you have the option, go somewhere else.
Yes. What else? Well, I guess we've done pretty nice circle around the topic, like what was the problem. And the park to me is an ideal solution to some of the ethical problem that people might see with FPV. Was there anything else that when I offered you to talk about the topic you had in mind, you were like, oh yeah, I actually want to talk about this? Or do you think we
kind of touched on it, but really just, you know, like you said, Lexi said, Our voice is the companies who we give money to. That's what's going to dictate the futures of FPV. And if everybody keeps giving DJI and these companies that just don't give a shit, they're not really trying to innovate for us, they're just trying to sell us whatever, we're going to be losing good companies because they're not going to be making money. So I'd really encourage everybody just support the good companies, you know, shop at the smaller stores. There's a lot of, you know, our big stores here get FPV, race day quads, pyro drones, stuff like that. Perfectly fine companies, you know, nothing wrong with them, but there's smaller stores. There's like my FPV store, there's Defiance RC, Fatboy FPV. There's a bunch of smaller stores that just like people in the community that are trying to make a living doing this. And I would highly encourage you to shop there. Shop at those companies, you know, support the brands like HD0 that are actually ELRS that are trying to do stuff in our community, trying to make things better rather than just selling us the bullshit that they want us to have, you know? Like be conscious of where your money goes just a little bit in FPV and it'll be a lot better for everybody.
That's a good message. I agree.
Thank you.
Finally, I always try to keep the podcast under an hour, but any projects, like talking about you now, what's coming beside the park? What are you excited about? How did your break go? Are you happy that you had a little break? Like, how you doing?
the break. Oh my God, I needed that so bad. I was like, it started because I went to go film a video. I didn't know what I was going to do and I just started panicking. And then I was like, I can't do this. And then I was like, oh, I should take a break. It's been about 4 years of weekly uploads. Haven't taken a break yet. I do a, you know, live stream every Friday. Now I do a podcast as well, Dead Cell Podcast with Grim Ripper. Mm. And it was too much. So even taking this 1 week off of not uploading, I'm so refreshed. I'm so renewed. Like, I'm excited to make videos again. I want to do camera angles. I bought an ND filter. Like, you know, you just got to switch things up now and then when you've been doing it the same thing forever. I was getting in a bit of a rut. So the videos, I'm stoked again to make new videos. I don't want to do like, here I am freestyling at the office park with my friends. Man, I want to do more exciting stuff or just different vlogs or just show different aspects of my life and stuff. Mm-hmm. The park is cruising along. I'm starting a Bachgrinder store. pretty soon, where I'm going to be selling Bot Grinder merch. I've been working on that. It's pretty close. That should be out in a couple weeks. I got this new 3.5-inch frame coming out, the Grinderino. It's a little baby demibot with little devil arms and everything, and it rips, too. This thing is so much fun to fly. This comes out pretty soon.
Okay.
And I might be starting a new band again with my buddy. Do you ever watch The Office, the show, the American version of The Office?
Yes.
Do you know who Michael Skarn is? The Michael Skarn episode? They did he was James Bond type of guy, Michael Skarn.
Ah, okay.
So I want to start a grindcore band.
Okay.
That's based on that. It's called Skarn, and it's just based on The Office. And I've been asking my buddy for 3 years to start this band with me, and he was like, that's a dumb idea. He'd never wanted to do it. And last week he was like, okay, I'll start that band with you. So
you
might be starting a new grindcore band.
You won with, you were persistent.
Persistence. And exactly. I wore him down. The thing is, he's been in other bands, but currently there's no other bands for him to be in. So he's like, okay, fine. I'll do your stupid office band.
So how many people are involved? You, your friend,
and we got a guitar player. Me singing. Drummer, guitar player, maybe a bassist if we feel like we need one. But usually I try to keep bands to 3 pieces just because it's so much easier only having 3 members. And a bass, for punk, it adds a lot. It sounds good, but you don't really need it, as long as your guitar tone is nice and heavy.
Yes. Cool. And I know you still go to concerts and you know the scene pretty well. So surely you will find dates and stuff like that.
Easily. I'm just hoping everybody else in the punk scene is a big fan of The Office, so they'll want us to play and not just be like a joke band or whatever.
Are you gonna? So, do you have ideas for lyrics already and songs and?
I wrote down 12 song titles, and I figure I never write lyrics until I hear the music. I have to write to the music. I can't just I'll have an idea maybe of something I want to talk about, but I can't write lyrics until I have the actual song. So I just did song titles, and I can adopt those to different songs and make them fit. But they're pretty good. They make me laugh. This whole project I'm busting up over. I love it.
It's going to be fun. And sometimes when you have the most fun, people feel it. It's a whole energy. It's a vibe. And it will sound good anyway. Oh, yeah. And then that's it. You have a mini fan base.
yeah, exactly. Anybody that's a fan of The Office and extreme music is going to love this. It's the weirdest crossover.
And I hope you can put them in your videos of flying, if that suits. That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to be talking about it for sure if it actually happens.
Cool. Well, thanks for all of this. I wasn't expecting that last bit, so I'm really excited for that too now.
Awesome.
It was a good episode, we're a lot faster because you speak a lot faster than all of my guests, so we went around the topic a lot faster than usual. But again, a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have you I count you as a friend, but maybe...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay.
Oh, of course. We've known each other for fucking shit, a minute now.
Yes.
6, 7 years, 5 years, I don't know, a while.
Yeah. So it's always a pleasure to speak to you, and the podcast was a good excuse to see you again a little bit through screen. So thanks for coming today. I'm really glad to know your projects are going well and that you are well. Well done on taking the break, because it's important.
Thank you.
It was
awesome.
Yeah, it's important to take care of mental health. I know you're a big mental health advocate as well, so I'm glad you were able to recognize it for yourself. So
Thank you.
And thanks for taking the time amongst all of this to come on this episode to talk about this.
For sure. Thank you for having me. Awesome as always. Always thank happy you. To.
And thanks everybody for watching and for listening to this episode. If you like it, feel free to share it with your friend. Give us some ratings, give us some likes. We're available on pretty much all the podcast apps, and now we're on YouTube. So you have many ways to support us. I have Patreon. I have one patron. So if you want to be our second patron, feel free to join and support the podcast so I can bring video to you. Thanks everybody. We'll see you soon. And in the meantime, have some happy flight. Bye.
Bye.